Welcome to the Wedlake Bell Legal Podcast, covering a range of legal topics, including updates from our four practice groups: private client, real estate, business services, and dispute resolution.
Hello, and welcome to Wedlake Bell's Legal Podcast, Co-working, Phenomenon or Flash in the Pan. I'm Suzanne Gill, a partner in the commercial property team at Wedlake Bell, and I'm joined today by Claire Nelson, who's also a partner in the commercial property team.
Hello.
Now, one of the big trends in the UK office market in the past few years has been the growth of co-working spaces. In fact, CBRE estimate that about 4% of the central London office stock is co-working space, or in other words, 10.7 million square feet, and most of that has been developed in the last 5 years.
It's a huge change, and often our clients ask us about it.
Perhaps the first thing to cover in this podcast is to answer the question, what is co-working? Well, for a start, it's not serviced offices, but something different entirely. In a serviced office, you'd expect to find a pretty traditional fit-out delivered to a turnkey standard. Most of the costs of using the space will be covered, and the occupier would expect to have a room where they can shut the door at the end of the day.
That's right, but co-working is not at all like that. Most people think of hot desking, but in fact, it is almost always possible to pay a bit more for a specific office within a co-working building with a door that you can shut. As well as a much more exciting fit-out, the real difference between co-working and serviced offices is the emphasis on collaboration between members of the co-working building and the sense of community that the co-working provider needs to generate.
Yeah, if you look at the Regis terms and conditions for the UK, so that's classic serviced offices, where the occupier is defined as a customer, Regis say, canvassing, soliciting and peddling in the building are prohibited, and the customer shall not solicit other customers for business or other purposes without the prior written approval of Regis. Contrast that with someone like the Second Home website, which states that 75% of their members have collaborated on business projects.
So there are two aspects to this, aren't there? First is co-working issues that landlords face, and secondly, there are tenants or large corporate occupiers and how they should deal with co-working. Let's start with landlords, shall we? The first thing to consider is the covenant strength of the co-working provider. WeWork have become the largest single tenant in London, and yet their credit rating has been downgraded.
That's not really something lawyers can help on, is it? Whether any covenant strength is good enough is a question for the agents. However, there was a great piece in the Estates Gazette on the 11th of November 2017, which looked at the challenges of valuing a co-working covenant. At the risk of oversimplifying a highly technical area, it's easier to value a mature business than a fast-growing one. Normally, when you value offices, you capitalise income with reference to the lease lengths. But by contrast, in flexible working space, the operational income and cash flow are arguably much more relevant. And perhaps it's more like valuing a hotel than an office. Also, co-working space comes at a premium, and the real challenge is to work out whether that premium captures the operational costs. The Estates Gazette piece suggested that 80% of the income comes from members, and the rest from members who buy add-on services.
Although WeWork get a lot of publicity, in fact, the co-working providers are highly fragmented. If you're dealing with a co-working provider that is itself a startup, perhaps the landlord should think about change of control provisions in their agreement, or indeed a key man clause. Will that charismatic hipster build up his business and sell it, leaving you with a distinctly less energetic operator?
Yeah, and the other thing that some of my clients ask me about are the opening hours. The members need access to the co-working space 24/7, but the meet and greet services, the catering and so forth, might only be available in specified hours.
Many landlords interested in co-working are attracted by a profit share arrangement with the co-working provider, almost a turnover rent. That trend might end once people work out whether it's a license to print money or burn it.
Yes, all those are pretty much commercial terms, aren't they? But there are some real legal issues to consider as well.
This really comes into play when you consider the alienation covenant in the lease to the co-working provider. The typical alienation covenant will forbid assignment of part, permit assignment of the whole with consent, and may allow subletting either of the whole or part with landlord's consent. The point about co-working is that the occupiers are given a membership agreement, which in property law terms is pretty much a license. This is forbidden by a normal alienation covenant.
The legal analysis is the co-working provider, who is the tenant, is sharing occupation of the space with their members. They're probably not parting with possession, certainly in relation to any hot desking area, but if it's a true license, they will be sharing occupation.
Well, you say probably, but why is that?
So there's one important exception. If I give you a license to use 12 hot desking spaces in a room where there are only 12 hot desks, that's de facto exclusive possession of that space. A trick to watch out for.
Good point. Both of those bring us straight back to our old friend, the Landlord and Tenant Act 1954. Broadly, people know that this will provide security of tenure to anyone who occupies premises for business purposes for a period of time, unless the contracting out procedures are followed. So if you look at the case of a company occupying a defined office in a co-working space, they're certainly capable of meeting those three tests.
That's right. If the occupation's temporary, then Section 43(3) of the 54 Act might help. That says you can't get security of tenure if the tenant is granted a term certain not exceeding 6 months. But there are two exceptions to that. The most relevant one to co-working is if the tenant has been in occupation for a period which exceeds 12 months.
So if someone is there for more than a year, or if the membership agreement is basically one without a fixed term, the co-workers could acquire security of tenure. Seems like the only solution is the time-honoured one of either contracting out each member of the Landlord and Tenant Act 1954 or getting them to move offices every 11 months. That could prove really unpopular with co-working providers and with the members too.
Yes, there are some landlords who seem to be happy with the co-working provider covenanting to yield up with vacant possession at the end of the lease term, and effectively making it the co-working provider's problem if one or two occupiers stay. Of course, that's only as good as the co-working provider's covenant at the end of the term.
Some of the co-working providers I have come across have requests from the landlord to approve the members' agreement as part of the lease negotiations. This is checked by the landlord's lawyers to make sure it truly is a licence and then attached to the lease. That's another form of backup.
So let's look at tenants now, or businesses who occupy premises. When might they be interested in co-working?
Well, WeWork, yes, them again, have signed up a large number of big companies for desks all over the world. For example, Facebook have a huge part of the offices in Shaftesbury Avenue. IBM have used WeWork to operate and manage a building exclusively for 600 IBM staff in New York, as well as Amazon in Boston and Airbnb in Berlin. This is taking outsourcing corporate real estate to a whole new level.
The classic use of co-working would be if you needed a satellite office in a new location where you know you've got temporary space. And the advantage the co-working offer would have, in theory, over a serviced office is the opportunity to become part of the business community in that new location.
Of course, if you're setting up a joint venture, which may or may not run for some time, it's a handy way of getting space quickly. One of my clients said to me that one of the advantages of co-working is that it legitimises hot desking. In a typical office, the British Council of Offices estimate that one employee will have 10 square metres of floor space. In co-working space, people only have 5 square metres. That's quite a cost saving.
There's also a couple of important legal issues for people to look out for if they do have staff in co-working premises. For example, if you're collaborating on projects with other members, who ends up owning the intellectual property in that?
The other thing to think about, especially for smaller companies, is the preservation of your own brand. Some of our clients have felt that as their company has grown up, for a better word, they have needed to move away from co-working space to somewhere where they have their own name on their front door.
Equally, large corporates might choose to put their staff in co-working space for the energy and innovation that they can bring. There's an interesting piece on WeWork in Wired magazine in June 2018, where the founder of WeWork is absolutely clear that one of the things he brings is energy. In fact, we've got clients who started co-working spaces themselves in their own building to bring access to an external community and the energy and innovation that can sometimes be a challenge.
One of the most interesting developments in relation to landlords and co-working space in the last 12 months, to my mind, has been the number of institutional landlords setting up co-working options. For example, Level 39 at Canary Wharf specialises in fintech. British Land have a subsidiary called Story. The Grosvenor Estate have a co-working joint venture in Victoria, and private equity house Blackstone now own a majority stake in the office group.
There's certainly a lot going for it. It seems that co-working in some shape or size is likely to be here to stay for the long term. The real question is whether co-working space stays at the 5% of the office market it is today, increases to the 40% that commentators like Anthony Slumbers have predicted, or slumps down to 0.4%. That's all we're talking about today. Thanks very much for listening. Do stay in contact with Wedlake Bell's legal podcast for further updates.
You just listened to the Wedlake Bell legal podcast. If you liked our episode and want to know more, then check out our website, www.wedlakebell.com. Wedlake Bell, building relationships is at the heart of everything we do.